We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. This week, I'm talking with Megan Aumann. Megan is a designer, metalsmith, educator, and entrepreneur who has built a multifaceted business around her passion for art, commerce, and visual content creation. That's just a fancy way of saying she's obsessed with Instagram and Pinterest. In addition to running her Megan Aumann jewelry line, she also runs a site called Designing an MBA, where she writes and teaches about the intersection of art and business. Today, we are talking about product photography for your business and how you can leverage do-it-yourself photos for marketing and also sales tools, and then why you should also be leveraging Pinterest to get more sales. Megan shares some of her strategies and tips and how she measures conversions on Pinterest. So enjoy. Hey, Megan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you today because two of the areas of expertise that you have that we're going to touch on today are areas that I think more product-based businesses need to know about and need to be leveraging in their own businesses. So thank you. We're going to be talking about product photography and Pinterest. And also we want to hear about your journey as a owner of a product-based business. So thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, awesome. I'm so excited to dive into some of my favorite topics to talk about for sure.
Awesome. So you've owned your own jewelry business and you've coached and mentored hundreds of makers in different industries. What is a common mistake that you see product-based business owners making specifically around like marketing strategies and tactics?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of mistakes, but I think one of the biggest ones is that they get really sidetracked by information that's designed for information-based businesses and not product-based businesses. So
Yes. There's
a lot of stuff about, you know, content marketing and lots of different things. And I do believe that content marketing is very important for a product-based business, but I think it looks completely different for a product-based business than it does for an info marketing business. And I can say that because I run both businesses. And
right.
So I think that's one of the biggest things is you get really distracted by these gurus who might not know specifically how to run a product-based business or the necessities of actually selling physical goods as opposed to selling information.
Yes, I cannot agree with you more. I'm seeing more and more people in our alumni community who are looking at these service-based business owners that are running classes about Facebook marketing or, you know, Instagram marketing or whatever it is. But a lot of it is truly tailored towards service-based businesses. And it's so different when you're running a product-based business and you're fulfilling these orders and you're having to run your pricing in different ways. It's just such a different beast. And like you, I've had a product-based business and also a service-based business. So I can see very quickly the compare and contrast, but others, it's not as easy for them to see that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really easy to get sidetracked just by all the information online about
yes.
running a business and trying to know what applies to you and what doesn't.
Totally. And I would say too, that it's fascinating. Like most of us are interested in learning more and we want to grow these businesses. So it's fascinating to us to learn more about these tactics, but yet to have to like look at them and then apply them to our own business in our own unique way. That's definitely a struggle. So
absolutely.
Tell us about your business journey. When did you start your jewelry line and how did that lead into you starting the Designing Your MBA program?
Yeah, so I'm pretty lucky in that I figured out my senior year of high school that metalsmithing was a thing you could go to college for. And
wow.
So I picked programs and I ended up going and getting my BFA in metalsmithing. And then because I had no idea what to do with a BFA in metalsmithing, I went and got an MFA in metals and jewelry too. I was like, well, what do you do? I don't know what to do with this one degree. Let's go get a second one.
Right.
And so coming out of grad school, I always knew that I either wanted to be a university professor or I wanted to run my own business. And I kind of wasn't sure which track I wanted to take. And so I had 1 year right after grad school where I was a visiting assistant professor at a university. And I learned in that year that I did not want to be a university professor. It was like the biggest learning curve. I'm so grateful for the job, but I was like, whoa, this is not for me. I'm going to start my own business. So I started my business. I started doing the kind of the craft show grind and then very quickly fell into the wholesale side of things. And that became the big part of my business right from the start. And then in 2009, you know, it was a recession. Things were a little tricky. And I made a comment to a friend of mine. I said, maybe I should go back and get my MBA. She was like, that's so dumb. You could teach this stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe she's right. So I was like, okay, it's 2009. What do you do when you want to teach? You start a blog. So
right.
I started a blog. It was at the time called Crafting an MBA. I did a little rebrand. It's called Designing an MBA now. And so I started that as a way to teach people. And it became very clear when I started it that there was a need for that kind of information online. And so ever since then, I've been running my jewelry business and running that business. And I kind of, you know, the two kind of work together. I try things out in my jewelry business. I test things. We all know the market is evolving so rapidly. So it's great because I get to test things, see what works, and then turn around and, you know, help other people with their businesses as well.
I love that. I absolutely love that. As you might know about us, like I started my business for the same reason, Tracia Bootcamp, that like I looked around my industry and saw people needed help with the business side of things. And I wanted to experiment on my own side and see what I could do to just to elevate others through what I was learning on my own or what I had gone to school for. So anyhow, very cool to hear your backstory. Thank you so much for that. I was looking at your Instagram before this interview and you have gorgeous photos of your products. I love how you show your jewelry in use. I like that you are also the model in a lot of your photos. You do a really nice job of introducing people not only to the products that you're selling, but the person behind the brand, which is a difficult thing to do. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that. Do you use a professional photographer for these or is it something you do yourself?
No, it's something I do myself. So I have been actually photographing my own work for a long time since I was in college. I actually learned how to shoot my work on slide film, which definitely dates me. You know, I shot on an actual 35 millimeter camera with slide film. And so kind of evolved from there, just figuring things out. And it's one of those where every so often I would try to hire a professional and then I would get the things back and I was like, I can do just as well as that. And so I would just kind of keep learning and practicing and experimenting because honestly, I think I'm so glad I did that early on because now photography is even more important than when I was starting my business. I mean, literally that's your content. That's what you put out there as a product-based business. And if you don't have the skills to do it yourself, it gets very expensive very quickly. And I have also found that the more photography you can create, the more it drives sales because it's just more and more examples of getting product out there, showing your customers how the product can be used, showing them how it fits into their life. I think that's the biggest thing is especially as you get to that like higher and higher price point product, you have to show your customers how it fits into their lives. Otherwise, they're not going to buy it. And so the best way to do that is through your photography, because honestly, I can tell you people don't read on the internet anymore. Like,
that is true.
Like I get questions about things that I'm like, dude, it's in my product description. Like, how did you not see that? But basically, if you're not illustrating it through a photo, you might as well not be telling people about it. So the more photography you can do, the better off you are.
I assume too that your skills have obviously increased over time. As you've done this more, you've found ways to, you know, just your style's changed or you've been able to shorten your timeline of which you're taking these photos. So what are some tips that you could share about setting up and preparing for a photo shoot if people are doing this on their own and they're kind of new to it?
Yeah. So the first thing that I'll say is that your life will be so much easier if you batch your photography, whether that's product photography or social media photography, it doesn't matter. The easiest thing is to batch. If you're taking one picture for Instagram and you have to set up, take the picture, edit it, and then post it, that takes a lot of time. But if you're setting up once, shooting a whole bunch of images, editing them in a batch, and then posting them over time, that's a much more efficient use of your time. So the first thing is just to batch. And then from there, I always try to make a list of what you need to get done in a photo shoot because it's so easy to get into a shoot, whether you're doing, you know, just white product photography or you're doing flat light or you're doing model shots. It's so easy to get into a shoot and be overwhelmed or forget things. So I will always make notes. A lot of times I'll keep, I have secret Pinterest boards for my inspiration. So sometimes I'll actually print screen grabs of those and I'll circle images of ideas that I like. But I always have a list. I always know what my goal is. And that list is not just what products I'm shooting, but what kinds of photography I need, what I need it for. So is it flat light? Is it model? If it's model, is it model shots for my product pages or is it model shots for my blog or is it model shots for Instagram? And some of those overlap, but some of them are a little bit different. So sitting down and making those shots and then, but also not trying to do too much at once. So there's like a sweet spot of batching and then getting overwhelmed. So I find I can shoot, when I used to shoot my model, where I was actually like photographing her and I was staring into the screen, I found I could shoot for about an hour before my eyes got tired, my arms felt like they were going to fall off. Now when I'm shooting mostly on myself or my camera's on the tripod, I actually find that I can handle like 30 to 45 minutes before I can't smile anymore, before my face just starts to hurt. So you kind of learn as you're doing it how much attention span you have and how many shots you can get off in that time. The other thing I will say is that memory cards are cheap. So just shoot like crazy. I just shoot a ton. I shoot on my DSLR, but if you don't have a DSLR and you're shooting on your smartphone, that's fine. Shoot like crazy and then pick your best ones and delete everything, because it's better to have a lot of options when you're editing than like three shots where you're like, okay, that one's a little blurry. That one, the lighting is a little funky. And that one, I'm making a stupid face. Well, then of course, like you're not going to be happy with it. But if you've got 50 and you get one or two great ones, that makes your life so much easier also.
Absolutely. I love that idea. I love too repurposing of things, like taking one photo and using it. If you can crop it in different ways, that you can use it for Pinterest or Instagram or your catalog or your website or whatever. I know that can't be done for all images, but in so much that you can, I think leveraging that one image for as many things as you possibly can is well worth it as well.
Absolutely. And now actually it's so much easier now that Instagram lets you post a vertical image, because it means I shoot everything vertically. I hardly ever turn my camera horizontally anymore. Everything is vertical because then it takes up the most amount of real estate. And then it's like my product photography is vertical. I can pin that right to Pinterest. I can post it on Instagram. It all works super easily. So I totally agree. Sometimes I think about the specific platforms, but I often cross post my images.
Awesome. So what tools are you using when you're taking these photos? You mentioned your DSLR. What about editing? Do you use any editing software or apps that you could recommend?
Yeah. So I edit, when I'm editing my photos that I shoot my DSLR, I do use Photoshop. I think a lot of people use Lightroom. I never learned on Lightroom. I learned on Photoshop. So it's what I use. I always tell people, your photos are going to look mediocre when you shoot them, whether that's in your DSLR or in your camera. I mean, I shoot in manual mode. I have really good control over my camera because I've been doing it for years, but my photos still only look so-so until I bring them into my editing software. And you can do that there. You know, I also use Afterlight on my phone if I need to tweak things on my phone. The most important things are not what app you're using, but what settings you're actually paying attention to. And what I find is that you can save a lot of things by just upping the brightness, bumping the contrast a little bit. And those two things immediately make your picture so much better. Because actually what happens is your camera or your phone, they want to gray out images. Like your camera doesn't like high contrast. It wants things to kind of gray out. And so you immediately, as soon as you bump the brightness, bump the contrast, it's just a much more pleasing photograph. And then usually from there, other than that, I do a little bit of color adjusting. I like all my images, my studio walls, everything in my studio is a little bit of a warm tone, but I really like my images to be cool. So I'll just bump them a little cooler. But pretty much other than that, other than like removing the occasional zit, I don't do a ton of editing. It's mostly brightness, contrast, exposure. And, you know, and I actually also don't do a ton of cropping. I like to crop in camera. So when I can, I like to frame things up so that I know what it looks like. I'm not a big cropper. I'm a big like, I always say zoom with your feet. So if you're shooting with a camera, like get closer or far away, or when I'm shooting pictures of myself, I step closer or further away to the camera on the tripod. So because the other thing is when you're cropping, if you have like, if you always shoot from the same distance and then you try to crop, you're going to lose image quality. So even if you're like a flat lay or product photography, shoot from far away and then get in and shoot the detail, shoot somewhere in the middle, shoot from those different distances, and you're going to have a lot more options there as well.
Oh, that's a great tip. I also have used Snapseed, which I really like, which is another phone editing app. And then there is a service I've used a couple of times for product touch-ups called retouchup.com. Yeah, and it's really inexpensive to have them do stuff. They can pull out, or they can clean up the white backgrounds in product images. They could also do touch-ups on people as well. So
that's
it, or gray hair, or whatever it is. I'm just saying, for me, like I've used it for that. So it's been awesome. But I think it was like $2 for our a cleanup on one of our images. Yeah. So awesome. So that is very helpful. And you've already mentioned this, but we all love pretty pictures. But the goal here is to sell more of our products and to leverage these photos for more than just marketing. Can we talk a little bit about social media and specifically how you're leveraging Pinterest for sales with these photos?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do a couple different things, because what I've found is that, interestingly, photos work differently. Different photos work differently on Pinterest versus Instagram versus other platforms, mm-hmm. not surprisingly. And so what I find is that I use my photography on Pinterest in two ways. So one, I will pin my actual product photos, and those do sometimes generate sales. But especially at my price point, what I find is that I have to do a little bit more of thinking about this as like a long-term relationship building, right? So it's very unlikely that someone who's seeing me for the first time is going to click over and buy a $200 necklace. It happens. Right. It's really awesome when it does, but it doesn't happen as often as I'd like. So a lot of times what I'm doing is I'm taking my photography, I'm creating blog post ideas around that, and then I'm pinning those to Pinterest. So what happens is I'm now creating this, it's essentially a marketing funnel. It's just a different way of thinking about it. So I'm creating these blog posts that showcase my products, but showcase my products in conjunction with style. So I'm saying, okay, like these are the different ways that you could wear my jewelry. So here's how I would style it this way. Here's how I would style it that way. And then those things get pinned to Pinterest. And the reason that I do that is also that for many reasons on Pinterest, pins that come from a blog post tend to go viral better than pins that come directly from a product shop. So you end up getting more traffic when you get those viral pins. And that just seems to be easier from a blog post. And then once they're on my blog post, it's very clear that I want them to join my email list and click over to my shop. It's very clear what they're supposed to do from there. So it becomes this whole big cycle. And I think that's one of the reasons that people get frustrated with Pinterest is sometimes they just pin their product photography directly from their online shop, which is good, but it's not the ultimate best way to use it, especially if your price point is higher.
Right. Because you're going back to your point, you're not building a relationship. You're not adding value to the user, you know, by sending them to a blog post where they're being educated or being shown different styling options. You're adding to their day. You're not just saying, hey, buy my stuff.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be anything super in depth. You know, when I say blog post, I mean mostly images. My blog posts are mostly images and a tiny little bit of text, and that text always has a very clear call to action. But the idea is that you want to give people a reason to go back to your site. So back in January, I did a project where I styled the same dress 30 different ways. So every day I styled the same dress a different way.
How fun.
And it was really fun. And what's funny about that is it was this really interesting learning environment where I was posting the images to Instagram and to Pinterest. And on Instagram, my engagement was terrible. Instagram hated the project, but individual followers on Instagram loved it. Like the people who were into it were super into it.
Yeah.
But then on Pinterest loved it. Those pins got a ton of engagement and a ton of click through because people were like, what? She's styling this dress all these ways. I need to click through and see more.
Yeah.
So it's this really kind of fascinating thing to see like how this same project played out on two very different platforms. And I was pinning it to Pinterest from my blog. So I was doing a blog post for every single day.
Okay.
So it was a really kind of interesting strategy because it showed people, you know, kind of how to wear my jewelry, but it also got people talking. People are coming up to me in real life being like, oh my gosh, I was following your 30 days dress project. Like I totally was watching it. Like it's so interesting to see. So I think that's the other thing when you're thinking about like blog posts or content, it's not just about like, here, buy my thing, here, buy my thing, here, buy my thing. It's what interesting things can you do that get people talking and get them thinking about your product.
Yeah. I love that you did kind of a, I don't know if it was intentional, but like this case study of Instagram versus Pinterest, because the two platforms are very different. But yet I do think, in my opinion, they're the strongest for those making products because they're visual based. And I feel like they both have their pros and cons, of course. But I do think that they're both powerful tools for product-based businesses. And to see how different customers of yours or followers were engaging with you, and that's very fascinating. I'd love to chat with you more about that in depth later. But I do think it's very interesting. What were some of your struggles as you were getting into Pinterest at the beginning? Because I think there's a lot of people that don't know how to use Pinterest, I guess is where I'm going with this question. And even myself, I've kind of shied away from it because I'm like, I get that it's like a search engine. I get that it's kind of like a Google and that it does push people to your website. But what's the best way to leverage this? And I think people have some mindset struggles over this. I think people have just some tactical, how do I do this struggles? So what would you say to somebody that's just starting out and like, you know, what would you tell them about Pinterest and how it can really change what they're doing in the marketing
side? So it's so funny because I feel like I didn't have a ton of struggles. Like something about, I saw it and I was like, yes, here is the potential. Now, of course, I felt the same way about Instagram. I think you're totally right. Both platforms have so much potential. But I think the problem where people struggle with Pinterest is that a lot of people start by using it as just a personal resource, right? You're pinning things that are important to you. And so there's no real strategy there. It's very much like, here's what I'm going to make for dinner. And, I kind of like this outfit and I want to read this book and kind of all of this really like mishmashy stuff that most users use on Pinterest. But when you're thinking about it from the standpoint of a business, you have to think of it completely differently. And so I say the best thing to do is think about it, first of all, like your brand magazine. So when you have a magazine, you have two things. You have the aesthetic of the magazines, right? What is the overarching aesthetic? And then what topics does the magazine cover? And so you want to think about those two things on your Pinterest account as well. And the beauty of Pinterest is now you can have unlimited secret boards. So if it doesn't fit into the aesthetic or the topic of your magazine, it goes on a secret board. I have plenty of secret boards, everything from like what my husband and I are going to make dinner to like my obsession with Harry Potter, which just doesn't fit into my brand, right? So you have all of these things. But when you look at my Pinterest board, it's very carefully curated. It fits the aesthetic of my brand, which is sort of this like black, white, gray, more towards cool tones. You get to branch out a little more on Pinterest than you do on Instagram. You're not so married to like the perfect grid on Pinterest, but there's still definitely an aesthetic that I have there. And then topic-wise, it's all about fashion and style, but it's also about interiors because my audience really likes interiors as well. And it's also about travel. So I'm kind of hitting those key topics that I know my ideal customer looks for. So that's the first thing that I think you have to think about is curating your Pinterest account better and taking everything that's not part of that brand magazine vision and putting it on secret boards.
That's great advice.
The other big mistake that people make, and this one drives me nuts, is that they make one board just for their products and they only pin to that. And that is absolutely the worst thing you can do on Pinterest because a big part of the way that Pinterest uses discovery or search is through context. So it says, oh, I see that people are putting this image with that image all the time. So if someone pins this image, I'm going to show them that other image. So if you're starting out and you're only putting your images with your images and no one else is pinning your content, Pinterest isn't showing it to anybody.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a big deal. But as soon as you start putting your content across other boards with other people's pins, it greatly increases the chances that Pinterest is going to show them to other people. And so what I'll actually do in terms of kind of thinking about my board strategy in that brand magazine is I've created many, many different boards and one image of mine, whether that's from my product page or whether it's from a blog post, one image of mine can be pinned to anywhere probably between 3 to 7 different boards on my account. So I'm putting it in the context of...
So you'll use... I'm sorry, I want to clarify on this. You'll take one image and it's the same image and you'll put it in multiple boards just so that it's got things that it complements with just to add
More reach? To add more reach. And I won't do that all at once. I won't pin it to like all 7 boards in 5 minutes. I do it over time, usually over the span of days or weeks. But exactly, you're putting it in all these different places to increase its reach. So for instance, let me give you a really concrete example so you can kind of see it. So let's just say I have a necklace of mine and I photographed it with me wearing like a t-shirt and a military jacket. So I'll take that image and I'll post it to, I do have one board that is just my content. So it's just my products and just my blog posts. That's fine. So I'll pin it there, but then I'll also pin it to a board I have called statement necklaces, which is my statement necklaces and other people's statement necklaces. I'll also pin it to a board called wear more jewelry, which is all pictures of people wearing jewelry. Then I'll pin it to a board I have called great jackets because guess what? I'm wearing the military jacket. Then I'll probably also pin it to a board called casual style because it's casual. I might pin it to like my spring style or my fall style boards, depending on the time of year, and even just my general fashion boards. So right there, I've taken this one image and put it in so many different contexts so that it's in relationship with so many more other images. And it greatly increases the chances that someone's going to see it.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about conversions and how you measure conversions because, now you're pinning these things to lots of different boards and you want to see traction from it, right? So are you looking for more followers on Pinterest? Are you looking for people commenting on your images? Are you looking to see that they're clicking through to your website and ultimately purchasing? I mean, I know sales are the ultimate goal here, but like, I also like to have some intermediate milestones. How do you measure these things? What are you looking for with your Pinterest strategy?
Yeah, so I'm looking for a couple of things. So Pinterest now has this amazing feature where it shows you not just repins, but engagement. So it shows you, and engagement is their combination of three pins, who's clicking on a pin to just enlarge it, and then who's clicking through.
Okay.
So that's the first metric I look at, which is engagement. But the thing you have to remember with Pinterest is that engagement is delayed. So you're going to pin something, and probably for the first several days, you're going to see that bar at like zero. Like, it's going to feel like nothing is happening. That is totally normal. Cool. So I'll scroll back through and start to look. And I start to look for like, where are the high numbers? Where are the ones that seem like they're getting bigger numbers in that engagement category? So I look at that, but I also look at click-through. So click-through is really important because they can't do anything. They're not going to do anything unless they've clicked through. Now, you can set up buyable pins on Pinterest where people can actually shop. I find that works better if your price point is lower. So if you have a lower price point product, buyable pins are great because they can actually shop without leaving Pinterest. But for most people and most things, you need them to click through. Otherwise, they're not going to take action. So whether it's a blog post or a product thing, I'm always looking at click-through. What's getting the best click-through? And then, like I said, what I'm actually looking for is not just, you know, sales directly. I'm looking for that kind of indirect thing. So then I'll go into and look at my website. If they are, if I have a day where like a particular post is spiking, then what are they clicking through off of that post? Are they clicking through to my, you know, to my email sign up? Are they clicking through to the product page itself? Are they clicking through to my Instagram? Because I have, you know, the Instagram widget. And one of the other things that I've kind of found that's fascinating is like Pinterest is really great at like the top end of the funnel for bringing people in. But Instagram is better for building that connection that you need for, especially for higher price point products. So they might not join my email list right away, but if they click through to my Instagram, that's a good sign, and follow me there, that's a good sign too. So those are the metrics that I kind of tend to look at. And then of course, I'm always paying attention to sales, and I love, I use Shopify, which I cannot speak highly enough of.
We're big fans here too.
One of the things I love is that I can go into my individual orders and I can see where that order came from. And so I know what's kind of happening and what's working there. And I have kind of a funny analytics setup in that my website is on Shopify, but my blog is, even though it's all under the same domain, my blog is built on WordPress because I've literally just been blogging forever and I have a ton of content, and WordPress manages that better. And so I can see if people are clicking over from my website, from blog posts, or from the main website itself, and landing and shopping that way too.
Nice. That was a lot of great information as to how to like track. No, I mean, I'm not being sarcastic. I like it, but it's a great like to see the customer pathway, right? The customer journey that they're taking of how are they finding you? How are they learning more about you? How are they engaging with you? How are they having a conversation with you? How are they ultimately getting to the point where they want to buy? And I love that Shopify does offer those kind of analytics that you can see where people are driving from. I want to go back to something you said. In Pinterest, you said that the analytics there, you can see which have high engagement. Do you ever go in back into that analytics thing and see which have high engagement and then repin those to another board? Like, is that something?
Absolutely. So sometimes when I'm bored and I'm like, okay, I need to pin things, I'll start scrolling through. And I will pin the highest, I'll repin the highest engagement pins of my own before I'll repin other things. Because again, Pinterest, especially with their algorithm, they like to see things that are popular. So if you have something that's already getting good traction and then you repin it, odds are good that it's going to keep moving because it is popular. So yeah, I absolutely do that. I use a pin scheduler as well. I use ViralTag. A lot of people like Tailwind, I think. They both have their pros and cons, but I personally use ViralTag. So I'll use that to kind of schedule pins over time. But I do find it's helpful to actually go back in and repin your highest engagement pins just from the app itself or from the website itself. I think that's really important to keep pins moving.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think too, like being able to see what has the highest traction to then give it a little more push of leverage would be a good way to do it. I'm such a Pinterest newbie. I feel like I'm learning so much from you right now. So thank you.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, did you say ViralPin is the name of the app?
ViralTag.
ViralTag. Tell us a little bit about how that works for people that aren't familiar with Pinterest posting software and apps.
Yeah. So it's really easy. You just go in and you can schedule your pins, and basically you can tell it exactly when to put it on, or you can kind of copy the same pin and tell it like how often between pins. So what I'll do a lot of times when I do a blog post is, or even with products, is I'll pin it once kind of live. So like right off my site, I'll pin direct to Pinterest because I think Pinterest likes that better. But then I'll go in and I'll schedule the future pins that way. And I usually go anywhere between like 10 days to 3 weeks between pinning the same image again and again.
Okay.
That way, if I forget or I don't have to keep track of it, it's a really easy way to be like, okay, a bunch of stuff is scheduled. Or, you know, if you are kind of have a few days where you're lazy and you're like, you've completely forgotten that Pinterest exists, it's okay because stuff is still going out there.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's the benefit of a lot of these schedulers, that you're able to batch your content. Like, we're talking about batching the photos. We're talking about batching the pinning through, you know, viral tag or Tailwind. There's so many hats we wear as entrepreneurs, and to be able to batch some of these things and create automations, it can go a long way. So
it really can. And I think the most important thing to remember with Pinterest is it's not just about like what your followers see in the moment. It's really about the fact that it is a search and discovery platform, and that content does have the ability to go viral. But more often than not, stuff doesn't go viral immediately. There's people call it the Pinterest lag. So it's like things take a while to gain traction. And so I always say you kind of have to like nurture the pins. You have to like push them along until the snowball gets big enough that it can roll down the hill on its own. And then once you get those pins to start rolling, you can have pins that send you traffic for years. Like I have pins from blog that are still sending me traffic to blog posts I wrote in 2014, which is amazing.
That's fantastic.
It's really one of those where like you kind of put in the initial work and then eventually it starts doing some of the work for you, which is what I like about it, because the shelf life of a pin is just so much longer than any other social media platform.
Yeah. I've seen so much talk lately about Facebook ads, and I feel like I've only dabbled in them, and I don't know what your experience is with Facebook ads, but my inkling has been to tell my product-based clients, like, I think you should really look at Pinterest ads over Facebook ads. Do you have any experience with with Pinterest ads?
Yeah. So I've actually played around with both, and I think that they both have pros and cons. So I like Facebook ads for retargeting for my website, because my price point is higher. I find that the best ROI on Facebook ads by far is just retargeting. People came to my shop. Now they get served an ad. It reminds them, they buy it. That's definitely, I've had much better traction there. I have tried some cold Facebook ads, don't love it. Pinterest ads are still a mixed bag. I've had some fantastic success where I've spent like $25 on an ad and sold a $325 necklace. It was amazing. But then I had trouble replicating it. And so I think the biggest challenge with Pinterest ads is that they're better at keyword targeting than audience targeting. So if you have a product that's a more of an impulse buy price point, and you know that people are looking for it, and you can clearly identify those keywords, you're going to have great success with Pinterest ads, because then you're just putting your products where people are already looking for them. So I find that that's kind of the best thing. You can build lookalike audiences on there like you can on Facebook, but I don't think they're as effective. Their audience targeting is not as good as their keyword targeting. So if you have something where you clearly know, like, I make this, it's very easily described and people are looking for it, then by all means, play around with Pinterest advertising. I think the other thing that's nice about it is, again, your pins live longer. So if you're getting those repins from an ad, you actually could still be getting traffic from that even if you stop running the ad. So I know people who have run ads for a very short amount of time. And when you're running an ad and you're bringing it into like a product category, there is a good chance that maybe a pinfluencer, someone who has a lot bigger following, they might repin it and you might get a ton of traction on it anyway. So sometimes it's nice just to use that to kind of like boost your pin a little bit, especially, again, if you really know that you have very clear keywords that people are looking for.
Those are great strategies. I agree with you that Facebook is great for retargeting, but I hadn't thought about the keyword stuff in Pinterest. That's really, I've also been thinking about it, that Facebook ads feel so saturated. And to your point at the very beginning of this conversation, I feel like they're a lot more effective for service-based people. I haven't seen a whole lot of success for product-based people. So it seems like Pinterest would be maybe a lower price point or a cheaper way to play with ads and see what would happen there.
Yeah, so I agree. And I think it's kind of one of those where the language of Pinterest makes the advertising make more sense for product people. Like if you got served an ad on Pinterest for the kinds of ads that service-based businesses serve you on Facebook, you'd be like, what the heck? But a product-based ad on Pinterest where people are already looking at products and looking at things to buy and looking at beautiful photography, it doesn't often feel intrusive. The one thing I will say that's a little bit challenging with the keyword targeting is that you do end up bidding against kind of bigger companies. And if you aren't getting great click-through on your ads and you're trying to use the traffic to your website function, if you're not getting great click-through, your ad's not going to get delivered very much. So if you have the kind of thing where you're just trying to sort of get your product out there, increase the exposure, play around not just with the traffic, but actually with the more exposure-based ads where you're getting charged cost per impression, because you're probably going to get your ad shown to more people than if you have an ad that's not engineered for perfect click-through.
Cool. So much to consider and think about. Thank you, Megan. This has been awesome.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of detail in there for sure.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one I have to go back and listen to a couple of times just to think about strategies. Because I do think, you know, like all of these platforms, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, like you need to think about your larger strategy before you start diving in and actually thinking about the tactics of how you're going to implement them.
Absolutely.
You know, is it for exposure? Are you trying to convert to sales? Is it just more for visibility and engagement? You know, it just kind of depends on what your plans are. So thank you for sharing all of this with us. I like to kind of cap off these episodes asking, what is a piece of advice that you would offer to other product-based businesses that are just starting out? You've already offered a lot on photos and all these other things, but what's kind of one just general takeaway that you'd like everyone to leave with today?
Yeah, set up your email list immediately and use it. So we've talked about all of these different pieces, but I can tell you that the glue that holds all of these things together for my business is in fact my email marketing, and that's what drives a large majority of my sales. And I kind of briefly alluded to it when I said, you know, getting people to look at the blog posts and go to Instagram or sign up for the email list. Mm-hmm. But you really cannot compete if you don't have that email list and you're not using it regularly. So set it up, use it. And even if it's small, reach out to your people on a regular basis, because honestly, that's what drives sales. And you don't have to write giant long missives because no one reads them. One image, a great call to action, that's all you have to do. And it really makes a big difference.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. So thank you so much. And also too, I always like to talk about the fact that you own that email list. If people opt into your list, it's yours. You can contact them as you see fit. Obviously, don't berate them with emails, but like, you know, we don't control the algorithms on Instagram. We don't control what Pinterest decides to do or Facebook decides to do, but we do have control over what we send our audience via email. So great advice there. Thank you.
Absolutely. And the people who sign up for your email list are the people who love you the most.
Yes.
Which means they're the most likely to buy your products.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. So what's next for you, Megan? What do you have coming up the rest of this year? What programs are you offering?
Yeah. So I've kind of just keeping on with all the things that I've been doing. Lots more product photography. I'm doing that one dress challenge again.
Nice.
I had so much fun with it the last time. And I'm also about to run a course for the second time called Market Your Selfie, which is a course that I developed after I started doing way more of my product photography on myself and bringing way more of myself into my brand and realizing that it was improving my sales. Before I did that, I was this totally camera shy. I hated pictures of myself. Like, I couldn't stand them. And I thought, okay, if I can go in this really short amount of time from like hating pictures of myself to basically being the front of my marketing, other people can too. So I created this course called Market Your Selfie. And the first time we ran it, it was January and the winter was horrible. So we're going to run it again as the weather gets a little bit better so that we can shoot outside as well.
Oh,
so,
nice.
And you can find that at marketyourselfie.com.
Excellent. We will be sure to link that in the show notes for anyone that's interested. And then where else can people find you online for your jewelry, for your designing an MBA? Do you want to share those links too?
Yeah, absolutely. So for my jewelry, you can find it at meganauman.com. You can read my blog there. I have lots of fellow makers who are like, I love looking at your outfit posts. So you can, if you're in a little style rut, you can go there and be inspired. And I'm at Megan Auman on social media on every platform, pretty much at Megan Auman. And then you can go to designinganmba.com and find my business focus post there, and also links to pretty much every e-course that I've ever done.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Megan. This was such a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you for these, you know, strong tactics for how we can be improving product photography and also leveraging Pinterest for our businesses. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Hey guys, it's Katie. I am getting inquiries from listeners who are very interested in one-on-one coaching. If you are in this boat and you're needing help in your business, whether it's growing your product line, getting ready for wholesale or shows, maybe you want help on the operations side, hiring a team, refining your systems, reviewing your finances, or planning for the future, doing strategic planning, we have experts available to help you. I personally take on a very limited number of new coaching clients each month, and I have one spot left for May and two for June. If you're interested in working with me or one of our other bootcamp speakers that offer coaching, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/coaching and let me know what you're currently struggling with so that I can get you paired up with the right person. Again, that's tradeshowcamp.com/coaching. We want to meet you where you are and get you the help you need. So let us know how we can help you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.